Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of Talking Sports with Silverbacks Nation. I'm your host, John Robinson, and I am here live at a field in New Milford in a playoff game for 13A. It is the Silverbacks South. We are playing the CT Titans, a very good team, 13-2. And this is a battle. It is 5-3 in the fifth inning. So we have a nice game going on here. I'm joined tonight by John Daugherty and Pops. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good evening, guys.
Hello, Mr. Daugherty. How are you? I'm at the site, too.
Rock and roll.
All right, all right. So listen, guys, I'm gonna wrap up some coaching here. And John Daugherty, tell us a little bit about the guests that are coming on tonight. And I know Eddie Bartoli will be joining us as well to have some conversations because he knows one of them. But give us some insight on who's joining us tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first guest we have at 7:15 is Scott Layas. I played with Scott at Concordia College. Shortstop. When I played with him, Drafted my first year, his third year at Concordia College. I want to say in the 17th round, I want to say, maybe the 13th. A work ethic beyond nobody. I mean, this guy worked harder than anybody and deserved everything he got. Wound up hitting a home run in the 1991 World Series with the Minnesota Twins. You know, playing with Kirby Puckett, played for Tom Kelly. And like I said, just a really good guy. Still living out in Minnesota, so you know, I really haven't spoken to Scott tons over the years. We played against each other, you know, 2 years that I was up there, which was kind of fun. And so again, it'd be really cool to catch up with him. And again, I hope that people actually, you know, are listening tonight or go back to listen, because again, this is a guy that I don't know anybody in my life that has taken more ground balls than him. You know, Giancarlo may be close to who he spoke to. And then Tom Padula. Tom Padula was a writer, is a writer. Back in my day, he did baseball, did a whole bunch of different sports. USA Today. I don't recall which one now, the News or the Post. Right now, he is strictly, all he does is horse racing. But back in his day, like I said, he covered, you know, all the big-time sports and, nice. You know, wrote a book. And I know he followed high school baseball at one point as well, too. So he's going to have some nice stories, and it'll be fun to talk to him as well.
Yeah, I hope we can get some tips, a couple of little inside tidbits from him. Now, what do you think, John?
There you go. See, Pops is going to forget all about the game. And he's going to get on. He'll be asking Tom all about the horses. He'll be at
I got to ask him
what, John. You're going to watch your errand.
I got to ask him where he was 20 years ago. I could have used him when I was running out to Roosevelt and Yonkers.
That's funny.
Hey,
so you're
hey,
at the
Clef,
same,
make sure
Pop,
I'm on.
You're at the same game?
Yeah, I'm here with my son. I came to see my grandson. I'm listening. I got to mute him because there's a lot of things being said in this dugout you don't think the fans want to hear.
Yeah, please walk away when you got some questions.
Hey, Pop, do you hear me, Pop?
I got you, Eddie on the street. There he is. How you doing tonight, Eddie?
Good, good. How's it going? I want to make sure you guys heard me because I didn't.
Yeah,
Eddie,
yeah, it looks like a good show.
He's from my hometown. I graduated from Mamaroneck myself, so he was a kind of a hometown hero. We used to watch him practice as little kids. I think he graduated in 87, I want to say, from Mamaroneck.
He graduated high school in 83.
Okay, so it was a while ago. My bad. All right, but I remember watching him.
Yeah, I graduated high school in 85, and he's a couple years older than me. So,
okay.
Yeah,
Where are you
was drafted in 86 out of Concordia.
Right, and you know you forget in Rhinebeck or Rye, I believe we had B.J. Surhoff who graduated. He's another hometown guy. So yeah, Leis and B.J. Surhoff that were local guys in that area. It was a good thing, man. Good time for baseball.
Yeah, it was a good. No, you wouldn't know
Eddie,
it because you really didn't
Eddie,
have that much
tonight,
access.
What's that?
Where are you tonight?
Right now I'm at my house.
Oh, okay. Oh, because you were breaking up a little bit. So maybe you were at a game also.
No. I have a little, I guess the reception's a little spotty. You know, I'll make sure I take care of that.
Cool.
So, John, you go back with this Scott Lewis quite a ways, and you said you faced him. How was he to face?
It was cool. I don't want to talk about it. I mean, I did pretty good against him, so I don't want to, like, you know, get him on the phone after I haven't spoken to him in years and say that I had great success against him. But I did fare pretty well against him.
Somebody's going to stir that pot. You know that. Somebody's going to stir that pot.
But, yeah, no, Scott's a good player. Like I said, he worked super, super hard. I remember talking about this a few weeks ago, you guys. I always hated facing guys that I knew. It's like you had that extra pressure, and I don't know if it was because of, you know, because you didn't know him, and it was because of bragging rights or whatever, but I used to hate facing guys that I knew.
I hear you.
They don't even get that.
Eddie Bartoli, Eddie, could you mute your phone when you're not talking? Thank you, sir. We got a lot of static. That's why I ask. You're getting a lot of dishes being cleaned.
No,
you doing
I,
the
I
dishes,
mute my
Eddie?
Phone every single time. Anytime I ask a question, I mute it right away, so nobody, you know, until I have to
I'll
talk
sure
again. I constantly. Yeah, I constantly put it on.
Yeah, well, I tell you, two good guys out there. Like I said, he lasted 10 years in the major leagues, so he had to be doing something. And I think he came in second Golden Glove to Wade Boggs. Is that correct?
Wow, I don't know. Like I said, I know you know.
Yeah,
I don't know about that.
I got to hit him with that one. I think he was in the 91 World Series, right?
Yeah, no, he had a great glove. He was with Pagarillo. Remember we talking about that with Pags a while back? I think they kind of – platooned with each other depending on what was going on. But Scott was a tremendous fielder, that's for sure.
They did because they had Gaetti on that team too, didn't they? Yeah, they had Gaetti on that team.
Yes, they did.
Right? And he got hurt. He got hurt.
Yeah, well, he hit a big home run that series, I believe.
Oh,
he
ridiculous!
Did.
Yeah,
home run off of Lee Brandt. I want
to say
he hit off
Tom Glavine.
No, he hit off of Glavine.
Yeah, no. Glavine, that's why it was. That's amazing. I mean, he was a premier pitcher. Not that you weren't, John.
Yeah, I thought
Glavine,
he hit off.
I mean, Glavine was a household name.
Yeah. No. Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No. And he played for one of the best managers really to ever be in baseball with Tom Kelly. I mean, I thought that guy.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to bring that up. I mean, you know, we
yeah, you do that. You
Tom
bring that up.
Yeah, over the last few weeks, you know, we've talked about about camaraderie and stuff, and that was a team that I know they had tremendous camaraderie. Dan Gladden is a guy that wound up leaving that team in 92, I want to say. He came over to us in the Tigers in 92, and – you know, he would tell the stories, and then when we go back to Minnesota, they had a couple little rituals they would do before and after the game, or after the game especially, not so much before the game. And, you know, it had something to do with clinking some glasses together. But they,
oh, that's okay. No wrong with that.
They had a very, very good chemistry. And, you know, again, I really think that's important. That it really does help when guys are pulling for one another. You know, again, a lot of times when you're a substitute player, you know, again, you don't wish the other guy bad because, you know, you want the team to win. But there are guys out there that do because, you know, they're worried about themselves and they want to play and they're hoping the other guy doesn't do well. And Tom Kelly was really a player's manager, and I'm sure he's going to talk about that.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to that. You know, I like to hear those inside stories, you know, about how it was with the management and with the players, how they got along and things like that. Because makes the team, you know.
Yeah, remember, Pops, he played with Kirby Puckett. Remember what Pag said about Kirby Puckett, the great things he said about Kirby Puckett.
What a great guy.
Ken Herbeck on that team, a real veteran player.
Yeah, Jack Morris,
Ken Herbeck
pitching on that team. Ridiculous. Oh. But you know what? I don't think Kirby Puckett gets the respect he should get, really.
Right, yeah, well, but also, again, that World Series, I mean, that could possibly be one of the best games ever in World Series history. I mean, that definitely ranks up there. That game, he pitched
both
10 innings. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, they had
I
had a great team. So they had some real all-star players there, and as you guys can speak about, it was phenomenal. Like I said, watching Leis and hitting that home run, I mean, we were all watching it as kids. I was in probably 9th or 10th grade, and actually it was more like 11th grade. And, it was a big accomplishment. It was awesome, you know, awesome to see.
You're right. With the Braves.
On the front cover of Sports Illustrated, you had the team celebrating, you know, jumping up and down. If I remember clearly, it was a really good, clear shot of Scott on the – because, you know, a lot of those photos, you know, guys are getting buried underneath piles and dog piles like that. But I think you can see him clear as day if I don't forget.
Absolutely.
You could imagine what that feels like, though, being on the front cover of the magazine, right? You just won the greatest event in all the sports, really, the World Series, in my mind.
Yeah.
And you're the center focal point of the win. That's got to be insane to see that on. I mean, really. You can't get any better than that, I guess, in your lifetime, you know?
I'm on the inside cover of one of the Sports Bill says. We had a bench clearing brawl in Toronto, and they put it on the inside cover, the inside flap, so it took over two pages. And I always show the guys and say, guys, see, don't forget the skinniest guy on the team. So I'm in front of Rob Deere, I'm in front of Cecil Field, I'm in front of all the big guys. He said, don't forget, I was out there first. Don't forget. Make sure you back
well,
me up one day.
Cecil was another underrated ball player.
He was
another good ball player.
He was a big guy, man. He was a big dude.
Yeah,
Cecil hit a whole bunch of home runs. You probably know this, Pop. Cecil Field and his son hit the same amount of home runs.
Yes, an incredible feat, right? I mean, that's the story inside the story. And that's what makes it so interesting to watch the game of baseball. Because anything's possible. That's the bottom line. Anything's possible in baseball. I mean, you know, playing with your son.
The Seager brothers, they finally played against each other, and they both hit home runs in the game.
There you go. How does fate work like that, right?
That's
in the cards,
because of all the different things, and there were injuries, and they, whatever, they finally get to play each other. So, you know, they're rounding the base. You know, one plays shortstop, one plays third base. And they're rounding, they're kind of snickering at each other, you know, sneering at each other. It was pretty funny. Then they interviewed the parents. really worth it.
The other guy
George.
Got even, that's all. Yeah. No, that's great. The parents got to be proud as you think. That's all you can do, right? You know, who do you root for?
I think one of the coolest things was having Ken Griffey Jr. and Sr. Here we go, Ken Griffey Jr. again. Sorry, John.
That's all right.
With hitting home runs in the same game. That was pretty phenomenal. That was a pretty awesome feat. I mean, you can only dream of that stuff as a kid, and it happens in real life. It's got to be. That's fairy tale. You know what I mean?
My question tonight, since John is at the game, how do we know when Scott gets on?
How do you know what, John? I didn't get that.
How do we know when Scott gets on if we can't see the number coming in? I guess we'll just keep asking Scott, are you there?
let me find out right now. Anybody on yet, Doug? Nobody's on? Not yet, kid. We're hanging in there, so we should be hearing from him shortly. It's 7:20. Yeah, so we'll see what's going on. I got Doug on the board here. He's got the computer going, and he'll give us the heads up. You got him?
So what field are you at tonight, Pops?
We're out in the New Milford High School.
Oh, okay.
Out in Connecticut.
What inning are we at now? Let's give us an update. What's going on?
We're in the fifth. Just took the pitcher out. What's the damage? 9-3. So it's not looking too good right now. But we've been down before. We've come back. So we got a good heart on this team. A lot of heart and a lot of soul. And kids really want to play. It's been a close game.
Is this a playoff game, Pops? Like a one-and-done deal?
This is one-and-done. So we have to take this one to move on. But, you know, you've seen this team the other night. It's a pretty gutty team. And there's still some life left in them. So we just have to poke them a little bit and get them going out there. That's all we can do.
Hey, Pops, what game are you at? Which Silverbacks game is that?
The 13U.
Gotcha. It's a good game. Gotcha.
There's a lot of talent on this team. And
you never
count them out. Yeah.
So are you driving home with John or you got your own car?
No, I would never do that, John. I might be a little senile, but I ain't stupid because win or lose this game, I don't want to listen to him all the way home. I'd rather listen to my music.
So you're by yourself?
I'm with the bride. She's sitting on the bench talking with Nicole. My grandson Thomas came out, and I'm on the other side.
You're gonna stay on the show though and drive with Nicole. You're gonna talk on the drive.
I'm gonna be with you all the way. I want to listen. That horse racing guy, he ain't going too far for me. I tell you right now.
The Pops, is that phone gonna hook up to the car? Did you figure that out yet or no?
That's why I brought my grandson. He's a technician. He's the technician, you know.
I'm just like the big.
Listen, I just like the big star, you know. All I do is drop the mic and they pick it up. I don't pick up mics or nothing like that. I'm the star here.
There's a saying for that: legend in your own mind. I think, right? Is that what?
Yeah, well, I know. I wrote it.
Speaking of legends, I'm always intrigued whenever we have John Daugherty on the phone. I think that's amazing stuff.
Without a doubt.
I know John's a humble. He's a humble guy, and you know what? Having him around and having him around the Silverbacks, that's a big feat for us. I mean, that's a big difference from where we were a couple of years ago. I think that's a huge statement and a big step up for us. You know?
Most definitely.
Why he wants to be around us, God only knows. You know, thanks, Eddie. I really look forward to doing some more stuff. Like you said, by the time I came aboard last year, you know, everything was in place. You know, I do my own private lessons. I've been doing them for 20 years, and I have a lot of kids that I, you know, don't want to leave, you know. And so, around October, I always book my cage time for where I do my lessons. And so when you guys had booked up all your stuff, you know, one of the nights that you did the lessons on Tuesday nights, it was a night that I did lessons. So it was kind of like, so I told John, I want to, you know, when I do the winter train, I got to make sure we don't, you know, I don't do my lessons on the same night as the pitching, so I can make sure I see a little bit more and get to work with the kids a little bit more and be seen and all that kind of stuff,
play,
you know.
We got to play at the plate. We got to play at the plate. Got him. Oh, he called him safe. He got him. Put the tag right on him. I'm standing right here, John, right behind the plate. Holy cow. I sound like Phil Rizzuto. You got to be kidding me. Wow, what a
Pops,
good play, too.
You almost played with Phil Rizzuto, huh?
Hey, Eddie.
He was a little younger than me.
Hey, Eddie. Yeah. Well, hold on. Scott didn't call
me
because I didn't send them the number. I'm an idiot. I sent something else. You got the number off the top of your head?
What happened?
Give me the call-in number for the show, 516.
Hold on. Give it to you in a minute. Hold on.
Hold on. I might have it here.
418-5472. I got it.
You got it?
I got it. If you call any second.
All right, we're looking forward to it, you know. He must have had a great John, I couldn't find nothing on him. He must be a real good Christian. Couldn't find nothing. I dug. Believe me, I dug.
You are a character.
I got to get a new
from Pops. Pops will give you the more.
I got to get a new computer. I got to get one that goes back into the dark side. This one I got
is
not good.
You still have an activist, I heard. Is that true?
What?
Pops. An activist.
Isn't that an overbite? No, that's an overbite, ain't it?
I didn't say after. Hey, Pops, we love you. We love having you on.
Yeah,
like I said,
somebody's got to love me.
We have Dougherty, who played with Cecil Fielder, and we have you, who played with Ty Cobb. It's all good.
I believe we have our first guest on now. Scott, are you with us?
Yeah. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing great. Scott. It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, how's everybody? Everybody good over there?
Yeah,
Scott,
thank you very much,
bro. I'm trying to figure out who the hell I sent the number to today if I didn't send it to you. But real quick, we got Pops on the line. Mr. Robinson, but everybody calls him Pops, so he's on the line. And another gentleman, Ed Bartoli, he's a Mamaroneck guy. He graduated a few years after you, so you're like a legend to him. So he's on tonight. And John Robinson, who is Pops' son, he's actually coaching the game right now. So you may hear a little chatter in the background because Pops is there watching his grandson play. But, again, really appreciate you coming on for a little bit with us. And, we always start out just kind of talking a little bit like how you kind of made your way from Little League baseball, basically, get to the major leagues, like, how you started out. You don't have to start Little League if you don't want to. But, from Mamaroneck High School, basically, on up, how you got drafted, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no problem. Well, first of all, good talking to everybody. And thanks for having me. Ed, Mamaroneck always is a special place in my heart. But, I played all the sports. I'm sure you guys did too. Football, basketball, baseball. Never dreamed about being in the big leagues. Just kept grinding and tried to get better and every single year. I guess I started to play pretty well, and as John will tell you, man, we went to Concordia together and had a real good run there, had great teammates there, great culture that was built there, and that's when it kind of hit me that, hey, man, maybe I could do something beyond college, but
Scott, one second. Guys, mute your phone, guys. Mute your phone. Go ahead, Scott.
We good? Well, my thought process was always just try to get better every day, man. Try to grind, try to outwork everybody, try to get better every day, right? And that's kind of was my approach all through even Little League, high school, and then when I got to Concordia, obviously the competition was a little bit greater than it was at Mamaroneck High School. So you work that much harder, you learned as much, you kept your mouth shut and you learned, you watched older guys, you watched the way everybody prepared, everybody played, how everybody responded and reacted to failure. Cause as we all know, baseball is a game of failure, right? And if you let your emotions, which sometimes I did when I was younger, I had kind of a little bit of a temper, they can't distract from the way you approach the game and play the game. So I was fortunate to have real good coaches, real good teammates, even at the high school level. But really at college, just watching the older kids, the way they went about their business, the way they worked, the way they responded to failure, the way they responded to success. So from there, it just was kind of maybe this would be a reality that I could go on and continue doing what I love, right? And I was fortunate enough to get drafted by the Minnesota Twins in the 13th round, and that was that.
Scott, you know, a couple weeks ago we had on Matt Murillo. I don't know if you remember that name at all, Matt Murillo.
Oh, yeah, Matt, awesome.
Yeah, and he uses the phrase, you know, what you do in the dark comes out in the light. And, I think of someone like you, being that I know you and being that I play with you, and I was just talking about it before you got on, like anybody in my life that has taken more ground balls than Scott Leas. And
yeah.
You know, again,
you know,
loving the game is all fine and dandy, but, you know, putting the hard work in. So, again, we have a lot of kids listening. You know, some of the kids are playing. They go back and they listen, you know, tonight or tomorrow when they have time. But, you know, if you could talk a little bit about that, like you said, yeah, a lot of hard work, but how many baseballs you took off your chest and off your cup and off your knees and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But then how good it feels that, you know, putting all that work in and when it actually comes to fruition, how good that feels. If you could talk a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no substitute for hard work, right? You know, I tell my kids, and I do camps out here, and I have two boys of my own, and you know, championships are built, and I'm talking about individual championships, being the best you can be, built when nobody's watching, right? Similar to what Maddie said about being in the dark. When you have practice and you're practicing with the coach and the team, the hard work is non-negotiable. If you can't work hard when you're there, that's set in stone. If you can't go find something else to do, but in order to really get good and really maximize your potential and your ability, how hard are you working when no one's watching, when no one's going to give you a pat on the back, when no one's going to say, hey, good job. You know, what are you doing on your own time, and how hard are you working then? And I think you can't teach hard work. You got to want to work hard, period. And for kids that are listening, you never know what you could achieve if you really put the effort into something you're passionate about, whether it be baseball or something else. And you owe it to yourself to do whatever you can and work as hard as you can on the thing that you're most passionate of, to see where you could end up, right? And that was my mindset. I was just obsessed with trying to be good, trying to be the best I could be. Like I said earlier, I never thought I would be in the big leagues. I never thought I'd be in a World Series, right? That's crazy stuff. But
right,
when you work hard and you do things on your own, that's the ingredient. Because, again, when you're doing team functions, you're supposed to work hard, man. That's what you signed up for. But how hard you work on your own time, that's going to be the difference.
And that's what makes me so happy.
Eddie Bartoli here. How are you, man?
You work so hard.
Good, Eddie.
Go ahead, Pop.
Good, Ed.
I'm the local guy from Amerenik. I played under Schiaparelli for a couple of years. And when nobody's watching is a key ingredient, because many times, hey, how many foul hitting over the overpass is an achievement, right? Even though it was a foul ball, can we agree on that?
Oh yeah.
I mean, that was how many times?
I think that I hit the building once in my whole life there, and I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, can I actually trot? You know what I mean?
Right.
When I played, there was no fence. It was the track.
Well, you remember John Harris. Did you play with John?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I'm old,
okay,
man.
Okay, so John.
I'm older than John.
Well, John he probably graduated in 85, 86.
I told you, guys.
You
looks good.
You were at the tail end of Marcel Galligani. Marcel played, I think he graduated 87 or 88, right?
So, yeah, he was. I was before him. I was 83.
We used to watch the games as kids. We used to sit on top of the wall behind home plate. Remember that little right behind where they had the track, which at the time used to be the little rocks. We'd sit up there and we would jump down and just we'd watch you guys play. We thought you guys were major leaguers. It was amazing. So we used to watch them in the Mariners Braves.
It's a great program. Yeah, Schiaparelli's done a great job there, and he's got a lot of wins. I mean, Scott, you remember my coach, Dom Cicero, who has the record. And I know Schiap, I think he has that in his sights at one point, you know, the 700-plus wins. I mean, he really has a good program. And, you know,
it really is important to play for good programs. I mean, I was very fortunate. Dom Ciceria, you know, was known as a pitching coach and, you know, just a great baseball man. Schiaparelli, you played for. You know, I love to talk about Tom Kelly. I mean, we talk about here all the time camaraderie and team chemistry, how important that is. And, I mean, it showed. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to play with Dan Gladden after he played with you and won a World Series, and the stories that he would tell about the guys on the team and playing for Tom Kelly. If you could talk about Tom a little bit and, you know, what did he expect from his players?
Yeah, that's great. So I think, Ed, you could attest to this as well with Johnny and the Mamaroneck High School connection in Eastchester. The coaching is awesome, right?
Absolutely.
And when you see that as a young kid, that teaches you how to be a leader, even though you're just a young kid, right? It shows you that how much they care about you. And I played for a lot of bad coaches. I played for a lot of bad coaches, and you learn from them as well how not to act if you're teaching kids and going about your business. But I played for three major league teams, all real good managers, good people, good baseball guys. But in my opinion, I was so privileged and blessed to play for Tom Kelly. I'm still friends with him to this day. I run into him here and again. He used to come to my son's college practices and games. And so, yeah, he was great. But what separated him was, number one, it was all about winning and working hard and playing together. But you have to embrace the grind, and you have to stay level-headed. And when the manager and the leader is level-headed and honest with you, and you could trust him, et cetera, that makes you that much more, I guess, aggressive towards wanting to win and wanting to do whatever you can to play for him. So the way I tell people about playing with, like I said, I would run through a wall for Tom Kelly. Other guys were great coaches, great managers, great people, but I don't know if I would run through a wall for them, meaning playing really hurt, et cetera, because TK, man, he was straight with you. And that's all you want as an athlete, as a human being, is someone to be straight, whether you like it or not, tell the kids how it is and tell the men how it is. Man, now you're all driving the same direction, right? You're all rowing the same boat. You're all heading in that direction. But he was throwing batting practice. He was hitting ground balls. So it was awesome. And the best quality about him, and this is the thing that I took when I was coaching, when I left and when I was done with the playing career myself, is he had such a temperature of the team that when he knew we were struggling, he would come in the locker room and kind of stir the pot and start to get everybody kind of getting after each other in a good, fun way. And that was such a good lesson for me, because it's just a game, man. And we're going to stink sometimes, but he would lighten the mood up. And then all of a sudden you get after it and you kind of take that stress and pressure off you for if the team isn't performing. So he had a great, great way to gauge how we were doing. He was quality. I was very fortunate. And again, like I said, I used a lot of the stuff I learned from TK when I became a coach raising my own kids, and I value it and I love them to death. And, I think when you get older, you appreciate a guy like him even more, because you could really reflect, and a lot of the things he said is not just about baseball, right? It's about being a man. So he was awesome.
Yeah, he was awesome. And Scott, you know, it's funny. I think you see, like you said, how lucky we are and how lucky. Like, I miss Sparky Anderson so much. I mean, he was obviously older, an older manager, and I would talk to him all the time. I say all the time. I don't want to make, I call them once a month, but I mean, obviously I call him on his birthday. I call him, but I definitely talk to him 3-4 times a year, and I miss talking to people like that. I always had a relationship with older people, you know, but it's funny, like Dom Ciceri, and I'm sure you may feel the same way about Shap, whatever. It's like, he was the same guy as Sparky Anderson. Sparky Anderson just happened to be famous, happened to be rich, but he had the same principles as Dom Ciceri. So it was like, you know, when you're learning this stuff, as you grow up, you're like, you're not sure who to believe or whatever.
But as you're getting higher and higher and higher, it's like, oh, my God, these coaches are right. They all have the same principles. They're all good people, treat people nicely. And it's you know, that's what it's all about, is treating guys great. And I'd be really remiss not bringing up Buddy Payne, who, you know, I know was, you know, an important person in your life. And, you know, what Buddy did for me, I think, was try to motivate me to be tougher and have more guile, or whatever you want to call it, on the mound. That's, you know, and so, but I know, you know, talk about hitting ground ball, you receiving ground balls. He's probably the guy who hit you most of those ground balls. So again, we're very fortunate to have somebody like that in our lives. And if you want to talk about Buddy for a couple of seconds, please do. Cause you know, poor Buddy passed away many years ago, and he's missed by so many people.
So I'm glad you brought his name up, cause I was just about to bring it up as probably the most important, outside of my parents, the biggest influence on me, not only as a ball player, but as a young man and a man, is Buddy. I love him to death. He was like a second father to me. Man, I had a key to the house. I mean, I was like, he was there for me, and I spent so much time with him. But I think it was just the work and the effort and the care and the love. Like, you could show love to kids without, you know, in different ways, right? And Johnny, you know Buddy, like, his love was spending time with you and working and getting on you and teaching you, mm-hmm. and making you tougher. So, no, Buddy is the single, outside of my mom and dad, the single biggest influence in my life as a man and as a ball player. I love him to death, and I miss him every day. I think about him, and, yeah.
Yeah, Scott, you had a great career. This is Pops. I'm glad you did one thing. You kept that New York accent. I don't know if I can listen to a Minnesota accent for 45 minutes.
Pops, you don't know how much that means to me, what you just said. Thank you.
Scott, I want to ask you a question. Listen, you're a World Series winner.
Family show, no F-bombs. Family show.
You hit that dramatic home run, which I want you to talk about. But I also want to talk about in 1994. Do you finish second to Wade Boggs for the Gold Glove? Were you platooning then?
Yeah. I think I was, man. I'm, like I said, Pops, I'm coming up on your, you know, they're going to be calling me Pops soon. But
I hear you. No, but yeah, my concern is, if you were platooning, what would you have done if you were playing full season? My God. You were such a great fielder.
Thank you. That's what I think I was most passionate about is defending, right? As John knows, I came up a shortstop. And out of necessity, Gary Gaetti left here, and they had my great friend Mike Pagliarulo just signed here. Johnny's good friends with him as well. And I was playing shortstop, and so I got called up in 90. And then 91, I was ticketed to go back to AAA because their shortstop was on a multi-year contract. Greg Gagne was great shortstop. And so out of necessity, they moved me to third. So I wasn't your traditional power hitting third baseman, if you will. I was a shortstop. And nowadays, obviously, they're big time power hitters, but I was more of your traditional middle of the road, a middle infielder offensively. So
right.
I don't know, man. I loved it, man. I loved playing third. I loved playing short. But it was good. It was a good achievement because you know what? I attribute a lot of that to Buddy, even though I know he was real proud and that I even was in the top three, right?
You did good. But tell us now about that home run you hit.
How important it is to play more than one position. I mean, here it is. You're here in the big leagues. I mean, did you when you played short? I mean, was the big leagues the first time you played third, or when you were in the minor leagues for a little bit, were they giving you some time there?
No, good question, John. So this is good for the kids. I never played third in my life, and there was 9 days left in spring training, and the Twins were on the market for a right-handed hitting third baseman, and so Tom Kelly, after one of the games in spring training, said, "Hey, go get washed up and go meet me on one of the backfields." And I had no clue what was going on. And we did that every single day and for the last 9 days of camp. And every day I'd play 3 to 5 innings at third. And so that was an opportunity for me to stick with the big team. So And I passed, obviously, which was cool. And that's how I played third, but I'd never played third before. And then later on in my career, when I left Minnesota, actually, when I was here in spring training games, I'd jump in center field. TK put me at second. So it was a lot of fun. And then when I left Minnesota and went to Cleveland, I was kind of like the bench guy that played everywhere. So I worked in right field, left field, first base, second, short, and third. So it is important, man. It is important to be athletic. It's important to play other sports. I know that's hard now with the specialization of everything. But it's important to play other positions because as we get older and mature, there's always someone better. When I got signed, this is kind of a funny story. You guys know Herb Stein? He's passed away, but he was a twin scout in the area. He signed Carew, I think, and Geno Larkin. And when Buddy was with me when he was when I was signing, and he was like, "Oh man, don't worry, you're the only shortstop that's going to be down." It was rookie league. John knows what that is. It's a half short season. So I was like, "All right, cool." When I went down there, there was seven shortstops. So I was like, "Oh my god!" You know, from the Dominican, from Venezuela, from a JUCO here, and so, man, you got to play multiple positions. You never know where you're going to be. You got to take care of your arm. It's so important. Versatility is the key. Look at games now; the way everybody's. They're moving big leaguers around all the time. So if you're a young kid and you say, "Oh, I'm just a first baseman or third baseman," I would give you the advice to start learning other positions.
All right,
go ahead,
Scotty.
Pops. I know you had another one.
Okay. Me?
Yeah, go ahead.
My time of the night to have a little fun. So can you explain to the kids out there what's meant by Pull a Herbie Day?
Pull a Herbie Day. I'm assuming we're talking about Ken Herbie.
Ron Gant.
Oh, yeah. No, man, he didn't pull him off. Come on.
hey, real quick. Didn't Ken Herbie, like, leave to go, like, wrestle or something like that? Now we mentioned Ken Herbie. Isn't that true?
No. So Minnesota's a hotbed, or at least was a hotbed for the pro wrestlers, the entertainment pro wrestlers, and they would always be in our locker room. So he would always screw around with them. They were
all right. Remember that?
Yeah.
So I have my son here. Actually, Eddie, come here a second. So what do you, as a local homegrown, you know, we're in a tough market, obviously, in New York, you know, because the pot of baseball is a little bit different than in some other states. So what can you tell my son, who's 15 turning 16 this year, you know, what to do? Like, I mean, as far as just making it and being a little different and standing out, like what can you tell him and all the kids that are listening in tonight?
Yeah. So, first of all, Ed, you got a great dad, man. I miss him. I haven't seen him in a long time and I love him, but listen to him.
Thanks.
That's number one. But you know what is, there's no substitute for hard work. And believing in yourself. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where you are. If you can play, they'll find you. And there is a spot for everybody to go on beyond high school. It's a matter of finding the right fit. But never, you know, if someone told me that I wasn't good, I got cut from a team when I was a younger kid in the Mariners, and I was like, all right, it's on now. You know, like that kind of attitude. Always believe in yourself. Never take no for an answer. You're not good enough. You can't do this. That's garbage. And you just outwork everybody. And if you love it, show it. And what I mean by that, if you love something that much, your work has to show it. And they'll find you, man. I mean, just keep doing what you're doing. You got to work your tail off and compete. I think one of the things, especially nowadays with all the analytics, and that's another discussion, but there's no substitute for a competitor. People love people that love to compete. And get out there and compete your tail off every single time in between the lines.
Scott, talking about the analytics real quick, because we bring it up every week, you know, with different people, different guests, or whatever the case is. you digging all that kind of stuff that's going on these days? And how is Minnesota, Cleveland, the places you played? I know, you know, but when I got to Detroit, we were kind of behind the times with a lot of things. You know, our scout report would be like, don't leave the ball over the middle of the plate.
You, Daddy.
Without a scout report. But are you into all that kind of stuff? I know training-wise, you probably would have been up for any kind of training because, again, you had a strong work ethic. But as far as the actual analytics and videotape and all that kind of stuff, can you talk a little bit about that, what your opinion is on it?
Yeah, so he has advanced, right, in our world, and that's the influx of the analytics. Just, we had the same thing when Johnny and I played. There were spray charts and tendencies and all that. So analytics is great as a measuring stick, but not as an end-all. You can't measure a kid's heart or a kid's competitive nature by analytics, and that's where I draw the line. Analytics is great to see tendencies, to see where we're not, maybe where we need to work a little bit more on an outside pitch or throwing low and away, whatever. But analytics is really cool, but I'm not making decisions off of analytics. I'm making decisions off of how a kid competes, how he works, how he responds to failure, how he responds to success. And those things that I just said do not take talent, right? You do not have talent. You do not need talent to work hard and compete your tail off. So I like analytics. It's interesting, but this is a game of emotion. This is a game of getting after it and competing, and that's where we still need to be. I think analytics, again, is a good measuring stick for certain things, so I like to keep it in the side bucket, but there's no substitute for a competitor.
And without knowing Tom Kelly, because I always used to show Joe Torre and obviously Sparky Anderson that I played for, that's what I loved about those guys. I mean, you know, yes, the spray shots, all that kind of stuff, but those guys, to me, they coached on instincts. I mean, I think, I'm not saying a manager's job is easy today. You know, there's tons of egos, the salaries these guys get. But I think a lot of the management these days is, okay, let's do it the shift on. This guy does this. Okay, let's do this. He faces, you know, he's not good against left-handers. Let's do this. He's not good against the slider, you know, whatever the case is. Where those guys are managing on pure instinct and what their feeling is. And they may put Scott Leyes, who may be platooning at the bench, say, you know, I got a good feeling about Scott against this guy. Put him up, and you get a base hit. I mean, do you agree with that?
Oh, man, absolutely. And that's what gets lost is the art. That's an art. I'm not saying managing any team is easy, but if you're just getting analytics thrown at you to make your lineup, then your excuse when it fails is, well, the analytics said that's the lineup I should play, and everybody goes, oh, okay. But no, man, right. you got to have a temperature of your team. And again, I'm a competitor. I know you are, Johnny. It's about how you compete.
Yeah, I got you. Pop, listen, I want to let Scott get going here. You got another question? I know you want to ask about his home run.
Yeah, I wanted to say, I mean, come on, that's a monumental home run you hit. What had to be going through your head when you swung at that pitch? Did you have a feeling it was coming, or what were you doing at the moment you hit it?
No. Well, obviously I was definitely – no, I was going to crack a joke, but not for the kids. But, Glavin just retired like 16, 18 in a row. That was the pitcher for the Braves. Our guy, Kevin Tappan, he just retired 16, 18 guys in a row. So it was like a pitcher's duel. So I was leading off the inning. And, you know, the worst thing, as Johnny knows, the worst thing you want to do in a game like that is like swing at the first pitch and pop it up, right? Or make it or put yourself behind and get an easy out. So
exactly.
Before I was going up, our hitting coach, Terry Crowley, I looked at him. I was like, Crow, should I take the first pitch? You know, and he didn't know. And he was trying to get Tom Kelly's attention to ask him. And then I just said in my head, well, all right, I'm going to set a fine zone. If it's there, I'm going to hack at it. And I'm glad I did.
Yeah, that was incredible. I think I read what Kirby Puckett had to have you run out back out for the applause from the fans.
Yeah, man. I'm not one of those guys, you know. I mean, I was a rookie at the time. I think I said earlier in the show here, man, like when you're young like that, you keep your mouth shut and you learn and listen. So,
yeah,
you know, I, yeah, the crowd was calling for me, which was such an honor. And Kirby hit me and was like, man, get out there. So, yeah, I wasn't used to that kind of stuff, but it was cool.
Yeah, well, you would have teach you that day, that's for sure. You would have teach you that day.
It was awesome, man. It was good stuff.
And playing, Scott, really, you know, we Pags talked about John, who's, like I said, coaching right now. He asked Pags who he'd take, Manley, or if he would take Kirby to start, you know, to start a team. So I'm not going to give you the answer. I have a feeling I know what your answer is, but let me hear it.
All right. Well, to start, I got to give you a long one because Mattingly's my guy. I'm a diehard Yankee fan to this day.
But, my man,
but
Donnie,
I knew there was something I liked about you.
Shoot, my kids have
Lee Maloney's
Yankee
doing
jerseys.
Good.
My kids have Yankee jerseys, but anyway, Kirby, he was the best teammate you could. Not only was he a great player, he was a great teammate, man. And I think Tom Kelly said it best. He said, "When your best player is your hardest worker and your most fierce competitor, it kind of makes everything else a little bit easier." And that was Kirby Puckett. So I'd take both of them. You're putting me on the spot because Mattingly's my guy. I know Pags picked Mattingly.
He did. Pags picked Mattingly. And I was shocked because, again, I mean, I love Matt, but I just think Kirby could just do everything. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, and I love Mattingly too. I'm the same as you. I stopped rooting for the Yankees for 7 years, and now, you know, I'm back on the wagon. So I understand where you're coming from. But I just had to ask because Pags said it too. And like I said, Kirby, you know, again, watching your guys' team, it was like, man, I wish I could play on that team. Like, it was just, not that I, you know, didn't want to play with Sparky Anderson. I'm playing for a legend, a Hall of Fame, and the whole thing. But, like, you guys just seem to have so much fun. And I was saying before you got on, too, I know you guys had a little ritual after the games that had something to do with clinking glasses together. So that was,
yes,
you know, you guys had great chemistry. And like I said, Scott, we go all night with you talking. Our next guest coming on in a few minutes. I can't thank you enough for coming on. I told you it'd be harmless. But thank you so much again. Even I have to mention, you know, you playing in that game. You played. I promise it's the last one. You actually played in the game, didn't you, or not? Or was Pags playing the game with Jack Morris?
No. Well, I played. Actually, we both did. I played short.
Really?
Yeah, I
didn't remember that. Wow.
Short. Yeah. 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 It was crazy.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
That literally could
go down as like the best World Series game ever. I mean, it's definitely got to be ranked in the top three or top five. I mean, that was unbelievable.
It is. It is the best.
Personally, I think it's the best. Of course, I say it's the best game, right? But the whole series was the greatest of all time. I'm definitely going to say that. But what Jack did was the greatest pitching performance I've ever seen. I mean, I know he didn't throw a no-hitter, and but the guts that he showed out there, man. He's like, I'm not coming out.
Yeah, right. Not coming out with a tent. Imagine telling your manager, I'm going out there, so I don't care what it is. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, again, Scott, I really, really appreciate your time, big time, so much, and I wish you well. I hope to see you one of these days soon in this COVID world. Nobody's leaving their states at all, but please, if you're ever in New York, let's please definitely get together. I know we have some mutual friends. Willie's here now, Charlie, and all that kind of stuff, so would love to really see you and spend some time with you. I wish you well, your family well. Please be safe. Pop, do you want to say goodnight? Eddie, say goodnight.
Yes, Scott, if I got a 2-2 tie, Scott, I'm going to call you, so be ready. Be on the phone.
All right, I'm on
Scott,
the phone.
Thanks
I'm
so
on.
Much.
Hey,
this
hey,
was
guys.
A great interview. My honor talking to you.
Hey,
thank you
guys.
Appreciate
doing
it.
Great stuff,
bring
man.
Back the old,
right, Johnny,
bring back the old
you,
memories from America, keeping it alive.
Bye.
Love you too, Scotty. Be good, brother. Thank you. Well, you know, that was a great guest, man. Wow. Yeah, no, Scott, like, again, I got chills, like, totally. I mean, I haven't talked to Scott in a long time. I mean, like I said, you miss you guys. I mean, it's like, you know, everybody has their own world. I mean, he becomes a hero, hometown hero. He actually stays in Minnesota. You know, I would have loved to even talk about that, but he's a very humble guy, so Scott would never really, you know, get into that. That's why I didn't bring it up. But like you said, there's nobody that works harder. I am telling you, you know, we had the Concordia College had these little racquetball courts, and Buddy would hit him ground balls. I mean, the ground balls, how long is a racquetball court? 20 feet, 30 feet, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's hitting his rockets.
Well, I watched them practice in high school. We used to, as kids, we used to watch whatever level of high school it was. We were 8, 9 years old. And I remember Scotty, like it was yesterday. I remember sitting up in the stands and the bleachers. It was, you know, it was good
and
stuff, man.
Diving,
and you knew he was going to be something special.
All kinds of stuff. Like I said, he was talking about Puckett. So he was kind of like, you know, our Puckett when we're in college. I mean, here it is, your best player, your hardest working player.
So if that doesn't lead you by example, and, you know, and I actually should have told him, and I feel bad that I didn't, because, you know, like I said, that's the kind of a guy that motivates me too, you know, that showed me, like, hey, look at this, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's not just hard work. You obviously have to have some talent, but, you know, I knew I had a little bit of talent, but again, to put the hard work in, it's people like that that kind of motivate you and kind of, you know, sets you in the right direction. So, you know, I really.
Well, I think the biggest thing was the words he gave to all the young ball players out there that we're all playing in this mix called New York, and you know, he made it just like yourself, man. That was big. I you know, you tell us every week, and I think that's nice hearing from another local hometown guy and who made it and that stuff. So, and
yeah,
Pops,
what happened to you,
great question. I'm a legend in my own mind. You know, I was never I'm decent.
Listen, you know, the problem is a lot of there's so many great ball players really that played in New York City, and they just didn't get the opportunity. But there's a lot of great ball players coming out of the East Coast.
I could have had him on the phone.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, again, we talked about that with Ty Guerrillo, right? And we talked about it with Dave Fleming. I mean, some of these guys going to big time schools, getting drafted really high rounds. You know, from Massachusetts, from you know, New York. I mean, it's cold up here, and so, you know, you got to be doing something right for scouts to be checking you out here in the Northeast for sure.
And
yeah, John, you're looking
at Dillon. Matt Dillon was from Amerenick. How about that?
Yeah,
right,
that's
right around
that
time. I think Matt graduated 82.
Yeah,
you know what, John? Look at it this way. You made it with the work you could do only in maybe, what, a matter of 4 or 5 months out of the year, where other guys have the whole 12 months to do it. You made it. So what does that say about you?
Every once in a while, I kind of like, you know, I shake my head like, how the hell did that happen? You know, and where the hell did that happen? But, you know, you got to give a lot of credit. Al Zocalillo is another name that I should have mentioned also. He was our head coach at Concordia College. And, you know, so, again, he did a lot of things for Scott and I to make sure we got seen. And again, he put that little school on the map by, you know, by recruiting really good players. And, you know, for a school with 500 or less students, and, you know, I know my year, I think Scott played there with NAIA for maybe his first or second year. I think maybe by the time he got maybe only for 1 year or so, maybe two. But, you know, when it went to Division II. But like I said, my year, junior year, when Scott was already gone, we were ranked number one in the whole country, 27th in the country, number one in New York State, Division II baseball, which, you know, that's unbelievable for a little tiny school like that.
Hey, Pops, I have a quick question for you, Pops. You there?
Yeah, shoot.
So we asked a question earlier, and I think it was an awesome question. I forgot who asked it. I think it might have been you, about the analytics of the game, and I think the analytics are good. But what I really miss the feel of the game where, you know, because the law of averages eventually turn, right? I mean, so you go by the analytics as far as you can go. But I think like Billy Martin, Sparky, I think those guys had a great intuition where they felt their gut was burning for something different. The desire was there for one player, but they felt the other player would have been the one that did it. And feelings are hurt over the years by many, many players, but yet the outcomes sometimes were so tremendous because of those calls that were made. I mean, I missed that part of the game. What do you guys?
Yeah, John brought,
I know what you
John
feel
brought
about.
That question up. Yeah, John brought that question
okay.
up, but I feel the same way.
Right.
Yeah, because back in my day, they didn't have any of that, you know. They didn't even have the rubber stretch band you pulled, for your detention. They had nothing. Put a Band-Aid on it and get back out there and play, you know. Well, if you had a little rash from sliding in because you had a wool uniform on, you know, put a little ice on, a little salve, and get the heck back out there. That was their answers for all of that back in my day. Today, it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, and you know what, Eddie, too, like you said, when you mentioned the names that you mentioned, Sparky Anderson, you think Sparky Anderson gave a damn if somebody questioned what he did?
Heck no.
You know? So
that's
a lot of it, too. I think once you got some veteran players and guys who have done some good things, like won World Series, I'm not saying Sparky Anderson wasn't like that before he won a World Series, but these guys are, you know, just gung-ho guys. Like I said, a guy like a Tom Kelly, Joe Torre, they just had a feel for the game. Bobby Cox, you know, they just had a feel for the game and they had a feel for their players. And I love the idea of instinct. And I don't even care if it's, you know, you want to call it gut feeling, like, you know what? I feel like I mentioned Scott just because he platooned at times, whatever, once in a while. But, you know what, hey,
you know, you put your 26th, your 25th player up there because I got a feeling he's going to do well against this guy. Or I'm going to put this guy in right field because I just, you know, defensive purpose for whatever reason. You know, they just have feelings, and a lot of times they came to fruition because they know what the heck they're doing and they know their players.
Yeah, I agree with you there, Joe. But you look at a guy like Joe Torre, right? Joe Torre, okay, great manager, but, you know, look at the cast of characters he had on the New York Yankees. Well, you look at a guy like Sparky Anderson with the Detroit team. They had to work. They had to work to win games, you know. So a little bit of a difference there. You know, your managerial was a little bit different there. Sparky was a good decision maker, no doubt about it.
Well, look at what Pinella did in 95 with throwing in Randy Johnson in game five. Or game four, was it? Whatever game it was. I don't remember. But, yeah, game five. I mean, the way he picked it was phenomenal. I think his gut said to do that.
Hey, Eddie, real quick, Pop, can you tell Doug Tom's having trouble getting through? It's busy.
Okay, right, hold on.
I'll text him.
Yeah, while he's doing that, it's me and you, John. Let's go down memory lane again, huh?
All right, hold on. I'm texting Tom now.
Eddie, you still floating out there?
I just texted Doug, so.
Okay, cool. Yeah, he's having a little trouble getting on with the number, so. I know there's been a problem with, I think, with the second caller all the time. You notice that, John?
I was just thinking the same exact thing.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Kind of fun, isn't it?
Great minds think alike, John. That's kind of scary.
Who's usually the second caller in is what we need to know. Oh, you mean the second caller? I got you. You mean the second
guest.
Caller as far as the guest. Caller
you went
two.
To you went to Mamaroneck High School, Eddie? Okay.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the good teachers left at that point.
Just kidding. Just kidding, buddy.
That's good. Listen, I still love you, man. Listen.
I know you do. Listen, somebody's got to. You know, I'm getting near that age now. I need somebody around when I'm ready to make the next move, you know?
I'd much rather talk baseball with Dougherty, but hey.
Are you going to go slow? Are you going to go slow with Tom, or are you going to go right for the first race tomorrow?
Is he ready to go? Does he got a couple of winners for me? I would never put him on a spot like that. I wouldn't do that to anybody. That's...
He's going to say, look at
my
losers. Newspaper.
I could pick my losers myself. I have no trouble with that.
Doesn't say much about your friends, too.
Do you guys remember Tom writing for the papers?
He wrote, I think he wrote for the Gannett, according to what I've seen. I sort of remember him. I wasn't much into the newspaper articles at that time. You know, as I got older now, I really can't do nothing else but read. So I've been reading. But, no, he was with Susie Wallman and that. I want to ask him.
He still can't get through. Says he's getting call cannot be completed.
All right, let's see what we can do on that. Call up to Johnny Thomas to tell him he's having trouble getting on the phone.
Is he? Do me a favor. We need to find out. Is he cutting and pasting the phone number or is he dialing it? Sometimes you cut and paste it, it'll work better.
You want to go? Let me see. I think Doug's coming up now. Is that Doug there? Stay on the phone.
Hey, guys. I'm back. We just finished our game here. And
John, Tom's having trouble getting on the line.
Oh, yeah. He just has to keep trying. It's the same story. You know, we know there's always technical issues.
Yeah, okay.
How you doing, John?
Doing okay. Hey, is Tom on the line?
No, not yet. He's having trouble getting in.
Okay.
I'm on now, guys. Yes, I'm
here.
There he is. Tom, thanks again for calling. Sorry for the confusion there. It seems like... There's something with our second callers. We don't know why our second guest of the evening. We've been getting that issue, but really appreciate you calling. We just had Scott Leas on, who you remember well, I'm sure.
Absolutely, sure. Great memories of Scott.
Yeah, good guy, too. Great interview. I just want to let you know who's on the line. So John Robinson is kind of on and off. He's the president of the Silverbacks baseball organization. So he's kind of on and off because his game just ended. His dad, who we call Pops, is on, and he may be hitting you up for some horse race tips, ready to go to OCB tomorrow, so be prepared for that. And we also have Ed Bartoli on from he's a Mamaroneck guy. If you need a Lexus, make sure you let me know. I'll hook you up with hook him up. But thank you again for coming on. And,
thanks, John.
You know, we kind of always start off, Tom, with, you know, kind of, you know, how you became a major leaguer, how you became an announcer, how you this and that. So if you kind of want to, you know, I'm not saying go back to first grade, but go back as far as you think you need to kind of like what got you into sports writing and that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, I have to say I had no athletic ability, but I was almost possessed by sports. And I have a feeling deep down I saw that was going to be the only way for me to be around sports. I had some physical issues that kept me from even trying to compete on a team. And I just, I was just so drawn to it. I guess I just felt like I had to find a way to be around it. And thankfully, sports writing became the way.
So as far as schooling and stuff, what you know, did you went to, you know, to school for to be a writer for journalism and such?
Well, you know, yes and no. I did know at a young age, and I mean, I'm talking as early as first grade, that I wanted to write. I mean, I used to go to sleep as a kid trying to write stories in my head. I was really blessed that way in wanting to know what I wanted to do. It was just, would I be able to accomplish it? Believe it or not, my big break in life, I guess, I attended Manhattan College, and I was looking for a summer job, and the guidance counselor at the college said, well, if you could choose a job, you know, where would you like to be working? And I said, well, any kind of job at a newspaper. And it just so happened that the Riverdale Press, a weekly paper in the Bronx, had a need for a messenger. And so I started as a messenger. You know, talk about starting from the bottom. I would think that's about as low as you could go. So I would pick up advertisements. I would pick up checks from people who owed the paper. I would pick up coffee and donuts, whatever the bosses needed. I did it. I picked it up. I was what they call a gopher. You go for this and you go for that.
And so then how did you wind up start, you know, like what was your first big job as far as, you know, actually writing for a newspaper or a magazine?
What happened, John, is at the Riverdale Press, I was a gopher probably for 2 years. And I did express to the editor my dream to become a writer. And I said, you know, I know that I really need to start writing. And I've been writing for the college paper, but I need to start writing for another paper. And he started to give me some opportunities to write about Manhattan College sports. And by the end of my 4 years at Manhattan College, I was the sports editor at the Riverdale Press. And then that led to my becoming part-time at Gannett Westchester Newspapers. And I also was doing some work for Associated Press covering college basketball games at Manhattan College and then at Iona. And then out of the blue, Associated Press called and asked me if I'd be interested in doing box scores at Yankees and Mets games. And, I mean, my parents said I turned all shades of blue. I was just so shocked. And it may not sound like a big deal, John, to do box scores at Yankees and Mets games, but it was the foot in the door. And for any young people out there, you've got to be willing to do what you need to do to get that foot in the door. Even if it doesn't sound like a promising opportunity, there are ways to turn these things into better opportunities. And as I proved myself with box scores, I slowly but surely got a few writing opportunities. I would say to the writer who was out there, you know, so-and-so is a pretty good story. Would you mind if I tried to put together an article on him? And, you know, who's going to turn away that kind of enthusiasm? And before you know it, I started to have a pretty decent baseball background. And that ultimately led to my covering the Yankees full-time for Gannett Westchester from 1985 to 1995. And, you know, I was on my way. It was a dream come true, John.
Yeah, and we talk about that all the time, like the perseverance. And we, you know, Scott was just talking. We talk about how kids, you know, on the shortstop. It's like, well, you know, you may be a shortstop at 10 years old, but by the time you become a, you know, a junior in college, there may be three other guys better than you. So you better make sure you know how to play third and maybe second and maybe right field and everything else. So, like you said, if it's box scores or if it's whatever it is, you got to do it if you want to keep on moving forward. But, you know,
absolutely.
You know, we talked privately about it a little bit, like how, you know, I don't know if people just think like writing is easy. You know, I mean, it may come easy to someone who is a writer, but all the hard work that you put in, like you said, when you're covering the Yankees, you're actually, you know, you're the Yankee guy for the Gannett newspapers. Like how much, like what your day is. Can you give us an idea of what your day is? Like what time you're getting to the stadium, what time you're leaving the stadium, what time you're done writing that article for the, you know, for that night or that news.
Right,
the deadline.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're there for a 7:30 game. You're there at about 3 in the afternoon. I actually have wonderful memories of being in the Metrodome, by the way, and seeing Scott take extra ground balls way, way early before his teammates ever took the field. Scott was a really self-made player. I just wanted to mention that. The work ethic that he had was unbelievable.
I'm so glad you brought that up and that it was so noticeable to like yourself that was there. We literally just talked about that, and I said there's not one person that I know in my life that has taken more ground balls than Scott Leyes. But sorry to interrupt your
No. We both had the same wonderful impression of Scott. If ever there was a self-made major leaguer, Scott is the example of it. So, and I mean, yes, frankly, part of a sports writer's job is to be a good observer. So I never failed to notice when the Yankees played in Minnesota, you know, what Scott was up to. And of course, I had extra interest in him because he was a local athlete. But the point is, you meet with the manager, you have access to players in the clubhouse. You generate as many interviews as you can. Frankly, you try to develop good working relationships with different athletes. Some are easier to do that with than others. And then you usually write in advance of the game. You are writing as the game unfolds. For many times, you are expected to have a story ready for the end of the game. In the ninth inning, I would push the button, so to speak, send the story electronically, and then update it with any ninth inning events. And then after the game, it's like starting all over. You go down, you do your interviews. Obviously, these are talking about normal circumstances, not COVID circumstances.
Right.
And you are one of the last people to leave the stadium, if not the last. You know, it's quite a thing if you've had the experience to be in an empty major league stadium and to be one of the last people leaving it. Quite an odd feeling, really.
Yeah, that's like I said, we're talking about work ethic. I mean, that's a long day. That's a lot of hot dogs at ballpark. And you know, that's definitely a different lifestyle for sure. But can you talk a little bit about, like, you know, again, the late 80 Yankees compared to the, you know, the early mid-90 Yankees?
Right. I mean, look, it's so unfortunate for me and for Mattingly. We overlapped. Our time with the Yankees overlapped. And I just wish that I had the chance to cover those powerhouse Yankees teams. And it just wasn't meant to be for me to have that happen. I would say the biggest takeaway from my Yankees years is the importance of team chemistry. Frankly, the Yankees did not always prize character during that period of time. We had Steve Howe. We had Pascual Perez. Mel Hall. Frankly, difficult people. People who were bad influences in the clubhouse. People with issues, you know, beyond the clubhouse. Pascual Perez, if you remember, his Yankee career ended when, frankly, he just could not stay away from drugs. And he blew the remaining year of his contract for that reason. And I, as I say, my biggest takeaway was just the importance of team chemistry and the importance of being a good person on the team, being a team player. And as hard as Mattingly played – as much as he tried to lead, he could only do so much. He was one person.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was another topic of tonight, but something that we constantly talk about. And, you know, when we were talking about, obviously, Scott with the Minnesota Twins, I mean, just, you know, as an opposing player, you could just see the chemistry that they had. It was like, man, if I ever got traded, I didn't want to get traded to this team, because they just seemed to have a lot of fun, great manager. I totally agree with that statement, for sure.
Yes. No, you could. I had the same feeling watching the Twins play. These guys really like each other. And on any team, on any level, the importance of having team players, it can't be overstated. You know, and young people need to understand the need to, what is my role? What kind of role can I carve out? And then you have to accept that role and do your part to help that team win, because that's when sports is enjoyable. It's
right.
Frankly,
you don't
not
have to
even
be the best player, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to be the best player to help your team, to contribute to your team. You just don't have to be. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know,
Tom,
winning
you
is fun.
Ball. I'm sorry. When you, because I know you covered high school ball as well. So when did you do that? After the Gannett years, during the Gannett years?
What happened, John, is it took me 5 years to get that first full-time job. And so during that 5 years, I was covering high school sports. And I will tell you, loving every minute of it. It was a wonderful atmosphere. As you know, I had the great pleasure of covering, at least occasionally, Dom Ciceri in Eastchester. And there were many, many wonderful people in Westchester County in many sports working with high school athletes. It was an absolute joy to operate at that level. And those were some of – sounds crazy, because I had many wonderful opportunities in my career at the pro level, even covering Olympics. I was lucky to cover 6 Olympics, but I have to say some of my happiest years, John, came covering high school sports, and just seeing the kids play for the love of the game brought joy to me.
You ever come across any issues? I know, you know, we always talk about helicopter parents and that kind of stuff. You ever witnessed any of that crazy stuff with the parents going after coaches? I mean, I saw my son when he was his last year of high school. I'm not going to name the school or anything like that, but the one kid, whatever, something happened in the game. Next game he didn't start. I mean, the coach literally, and we set the high school field pretty well, and we thought the coach was going to, the parent was going to climb over the fence after the coach. We could not believe it. So have you ever seen any of that stuff go on?
Yes, unfortunately, I did. Two instances, I won't name names, but in one of them, it involved a player at Fox Lane who, between innings, just broke down in tears because, frankly, his father was on him to such a degree. And he just could not handle that pressure, and it was an unfair pressure being placed on him. I think the parents always need to understand it needs to be a game. It needs to be fun. When it stops being that, it's just not a pleasure. It's probably not even worth doing. I also had another situation, an Irvington basketball player. The team was in a playoff game, Long Island. The poor player, his father had been yelling at him the entire game. He grabs a rebound, very tight game, and just froze, and an inexplicable moment put the basketball into the wrong goal. And the Irvington Bulldogs lost by a point. I had the miserable duty. I felt I had to try to interview him about what could possibly have gone through his mind to put the ball in the wrong basket. And the poor kid just broke down in tears, and frankly, I felt like crying myself. And I knew I had at least tried to do my job, and I said, no, I understand. And I just worked, you know, wrote around it. But I had to say, of course, what had actually happened in the game.
Yeah.
And to this day, I feel for him.
I think it happens. A lot of parents, they try to live through their kids. Maybe they didn't make it, and they want their kid to get further than them or whatever. And again, you know, I'm a parent. Of course, I wanted my son to be, the best player in the world. But you know, again, it's sad to see it like that because it does happen. And like you said, parents do need to realize it is a game. I don't want to say your kid's not going to the major leagues. If anybody told my parents your son's not going to the major leagues, they would have looked at him like, who's even thinking about that? So, well, I'm just making the point that, you know, crazy things do happen. But, again, you got to treat it as a game. Like you said, we wear these funny uniforms. You wear a hat. You got stirrups. You know, you're not going to walk around the street like that. So it is a game. And you know, you bringing up that point, you know, how difficult is that over the years when you got to, you know, interview guys like, say, like a Bill Buckner, you know, when the game's over. I'm not saying you were there, but you know what I'm getting at. When guys make a bad error or they make a mental mistake or whatever, I get, how difficult is it that those times asking those questions to the players?
Absolutely. I mean, I will tell you this. As a member of the media, I'm aware of how unfair we often are because I did have the honor of covering that game, that World Series game, and I do consider it an honor to cover any of these sports events. And as you know, so much led up to that moment. Yeah, the ball went through Buckner's legs, but there was a lot that happened that led up to that. And if the Red Sox had stopped the bleeding at any other point, it never even got to that point where Buckner ultimately became one of the greatest GOATs, I guess, in World Series history. But, you know, you and I both know the game better than that. It's a lot that leads up to it.
Yeah, and what a phenomenal player. When you go back to his stats, you know, I never knew what a great player he was. But I'm taking over the interview, Tom, so I'm going to shut up a second. So
no, it's okay,
jump in
John.
There.
It's okay. I'm enjoying listening to everything he has to say. Tom, don't worry. I'm not going to ask you for any tips. I'm not that type of guy. We'll talk
okay.
After the show. Listen,
I only
you
have bad information anyway.
You're a well-respected writer within the thoroughbred industry. And, again, thank you for your service. We appreciate that. Korean War vet, am I right?
Oh, not me, no. No, you're getting me confused with somebody else. Might have been
okay.
Another Padula. I did have family members who served.
Okay. And
that's the first snafu, Pop. The whole 3-4 months, that's the first snafu you had.
Three strikes and I'm out, John.
Pop is coming up with all kinds of stuff that we don't even know where he gets his information from. He's blocking the guests and everything. So when you say that, I say, wait a second, I'm going to be shocked now. I know Tommy
but
that
a here's a question that you did do. You did travel the country interviewing Susie Waldman, am I right?
Yes, I actually wrote about Susan for Westchester Magazine. And, yes, Susan was a traveling companion.
Yes, could you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, I think she's a very brilliant woman as far as baseball is concerned. She's very knowledgeable.
Yeah, I mean, she when we both started, she was fairly new to the game as I was. It's, you know, as I was describing before, it's quite the challenge to cover a major league team, especially when it's the New York Yankees with so much attention on that team. And frankly, a lot of media competition. But she always held her ground very well. She was eager to learn about the game. And that has that eagerness to learn about the game, you know, served both of us very well, really. I mean, that's where it needs to start. Do you care to excel in your job? If you know, you need to have that immense desire to do well.
Can be high.
Absolutely. That's a good advice. And the only other thing I'd like to say is when you're interviewing, I mean, where do you start? Now, where do you start your basic interview with an
individual?
Yeah,
I mean, there are certain interviews where I prepare. Just say, for instance, you know, in the years I was covering, if you were going to interview George Steinbrenner, you knew that you had just a few minutes. And you had better make sure that you ask the questions that you felt you absolutely had to ask, because he could end the interview at any point. He would sort of rush you off the phone. He'd give you a couple of comments, but you never knew when he was going to say, gotta go, and that was it. You know, click. So I would try to be as prepared as I could be to interview him. I mean, a player like Don Mattingly was very approachable, and frankly, I could have a much more casual approach to a Mattingly because I knew, frankly, we had a good relationship, and I was very confident he would give me the time I needed and also thoughtful answers. And, you know, that was a blessing and a joy to interview him because of that.
But Tom, this is what I'm saying, what's so difficult, because there are guys that read every single word that's ever written about them. You know, I was a guy, I tried to stay away from the paper if I could, because it's just, you know, you just, you know, because especially beat writers, you know, you're going to see them every single day. I mean, it's got to be difficult at times. I mean, when you're telling the truth, the guy may be struggling, maybe slumping. You know, do you have any problems where the guy then doesn't want to talk to you, or maybe blows you off for a week or 2 weeks or a month, or, you know, even longer than that, maybe because he didn't like something you said about him?
Oh, absolutely. Things happen. I'll tell you a very quick anecdote. I mentioned Mel Hall, difficult guy. The players were just coming back from a work stoppage, a strike, and there was a big push on to let's reach out to the fans, let's make sure the fans know we are welcoming them back. The Yankees are playing in Milwaukee. A boy has attached a baseball to the end of a fishing pole, and as you entered the Yankee dugout, which reporters had that kind of access before the game, you see the ball dangling with a note, please sign me. And, you know, I was kind of charmed by this. Hey, this is a pretty clever kid. Well, Mel Hall sees it, gets a pair of scissors from the trainer, cuts the cord, and takes the kid's ball. I admit
That's
to
tough.
Being personally incensed by this. I wrote it the next day for USA Today, which is Gannett's flagship newspaper.
Yep.
I get a call from Michael Kay warning me that Mel Hall wants to kill me. He's like, you, and he's like, I am serious. He may represent a physical threat to you. So as I immediately enter the clubhouse, make a beeline for Mattingly's locker, and tell him what has happened. And he's like, don't worry, we'll have your back. Just stay away from him. I stayed away from Mel for years. I really did, because I didn't want a confrontation. You know, no media member should get involved in that kind of confrontation. But I also felt that I reported something that had to be reported.
Yeah, I mean, some guys just have no common sense. That's a shame. That really is. So again, talking about all the different things you've done, you know, covering all these different sports. So, you know, to just go from covering baseball, like I said, doing Olympics, all that kind of stuff, and it just shows how versatile you are and how important it is to be versatile if you want to have a career as long as yours, to go into talking about horse racing and exactly what you do talk about in the horse. So if you could talk to us about that and how that happened and how easy and or difficult that transition was.
Right. What happened, John, is when I went to USA Today, their need primarily was for me to cover the National Football League, and I had followed football as a fan, but not as a writer. So that was a transition I had to make. And then, frankly, and this is another good tip for young people, it's up to you to find ways to make yourself valuable, whether it's in employment or on a team. So I was thinking, how do I add to my value beyond being a football writer, especially since I was really learning what it is to write football at a national level, no less. And so it occurred to me, you know, I do have a real interest in horse racing, and maybe they could use me to do some horse racing. And I volunteered myself. They took me up on it, and I started to develop expertise there. I was with USA Today, I'm proud to say, for 18 years. My career there did end in 2012, but thankfully I had many contacts in horse racing, and I felt I had built some expertise, and so that has given me an opportunity to freelance in that sport. And there are many wonderful people in the sport. Of course, like any sport, it has some bad ones too. But I try to gravitate to the good ones, and it's been a wonderful way to extend my writing career. I'm immensely grateful to continue to write it's a passion at this point, and I've never viewed it as a job, John, and I'm so grateful for that.
And where do you do that? Even without COVID, obviously, I'm not talking about COVID world, but I mean, is that something that do you actually go to an office, you write out of your house and just send it in? How does that work?
A lot of it is now, especially due to COVID, a lot of it is working from the house. Thankfully, over time, you build up contacts. You have cell numbers for trainers, jockeys. You have good working relationships. And those have come in so handy during COVID. Under normal circumstances, though, you actually, they call it working the barns. You have access to the barn area. Racing, as far as preparing horses for competition, is very much a morning sport. And so if you go to the barn areas around 9, 10 a.m., trainers are just finishing with their training, and many of them will give you time for an interview. And you actually have just wonderful access. I mean, imagine if you tried to get a cell number for a Tom Brady or a Jacob deGrom or somebody like that. But in racing, frankly, where they really need the coverage and they recognize that they need the coverage, they need the attention drawn to the sport, you can have that kind of access, and it's a joy.
So pre-COVID, I mean, you're going to Preakness, you're going to Belmont, you're going to Kentucky Derby, you're going to those places?
I'm proud to say I've covered every Triple Crown race since 1998. I'll also say this, I think my streak is about to end, because I do have a bit of some concern about going to Kentucky. And as much as I'm proud of my little streak, it's probably not worth risking getting sick. I'm 64 now, and, you know, I may have to make a concession to getting a little older there, John.
Tom, we know you can't interview the horses, although there is one fellow that you know that did talk to the horses. I would like you to talk about that guy. But when you interview him, you talk mostly to the jockeys, or do you talk mostly to the owners? And Bill Parcells was a big owner. Maybe you could talk about that.
Yes. Bill, I have to tell you, I thoroughly enjoy going to the races. I am not a major player. But if I'm not working and it's Saratoga season and we don't have COVID, I'm at the races at Saratoga a lot, and so is Bill Parcells. And he does remember me from my football days. It's kind of nice to see him, you know, without the pressures of being a football coach. And, you know, he can move around Saratoga very easily. People are very respectful of him and his space. And
you don't wear one of those funny hats, do you, Tom?
I don't wear funny hats, no.
Okay.
No funny hats here. I have to say I'm a pretty, John knows me, I'm a pretty quiet guy, I think. Pretty understated.
Yes, absolutely, laid back for sure.
Yeah.
So, Tom, listen, I really appreciate your time. I mean, I just, you know, as you know, we got the kids listening, and, you know, some of them, a bunch of them played tonight, there's playoff season, stuff like that, but they, you know, they're able to go listen later on tonight and they listen tomorrow. And as I talk to you about it, I'm always trying to, you know, get some lessons for the kids mostly in that. And, you know, I just want to get your opinion on, like, if someone wants to go into journalism today. I mean, you know, because there's so many different things going on these days with not that you can make a career on Twitter, even though I think some people do. But, you know, they have blogs, and there's just so many different things that people could do. Do you have any advice on a direction somebody should go, or what they should possibly do, certain schools to go to, any of that kind of stuff, any kind of advice you could throw out that way?
Well, I mean, I guess the biggest thing is, you know, in telling my story, perhaps it just illustrates how you have to try to latch on to any opportunity at all, even if it doesn't seem promising. Find ways to make yourself valuable. And I guess the most important thing is, and I could not emphasize this more, be open to telling both sides of a story. It troubles me terribly to see the way some members of the media, many members of the media, are operating today. It is not your job as a reporter to tell people how to think. It's simply to present both sides of the story and let the reader decide. couldn't deliver that message more strongly, John.
That's a great point. It's kind of like what I tell people at my job when we got to write incident reports. You don't write down that you think he broke his leg. You write down the fact. You write down a person's name. You write down how they fell, where they fell, what the weather condition was. And again, just write down the facts and let everybody else get decisions. I totally agree with that. Everybody's kind of trying to tell you how you should feel about somebody as opposed to just give me the facts and let me decide for myself how I feel. So that's some great advice and a great opinion there. But, again, really, really appreciate you coming on and helping us out. Pops, I don't know if you have anything else, but I just, otherwise I'm going to let Tom go, but I just really wanted to thank you again for your friendship over the years. I know you've never said anything bad about me in the press, maybe behind my back, but I know you well enough that you probably didn't. And again, I just really want to thank you for your time and coming on. I wish you the best. Please stay safe. Hopefully something happens maybe before you can still get to Kentucky. That would be great. And again, I thank you so much for coming on.
Well, John, thanks so much. It was a pleasure to cover you, and it's a greater pleasure even to know you now.
Thank you so much.
Very
sir.
Good interview. We very appreciated listening to all you had to say. You're a very wise man, and lots of luck in your future.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate both of you for having me.
Take care.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. Take care, Tom. That was a good interview, John. Nice man.
Yeah, he's a super nice man. Again, as I say it every week, of course, I'm only asking people that I know to be nice and, obviously to give their time. But he cares about people.
A little variety there.
He cares. So, I mean, the things he's saying, any advice he's throwing out tonight is because he really cares and wants the kids to. And that's another reason why, again, I'm trying to just mix this up every week and not just have players on. I know it's fun to talk to a guy who hit a home run in a World Series, but, again, Tom was there covering it, like you just heard.
They bring good message. He brings a good message, When you bring a good message, it doesn't matter whether you're playing baseball, you're playing football, you're tiddlywinks, you're writing, whatever. You can bring a good message to the kids. That's what you want to do.
If we got 200 kids in the program right now, 200 kids got a much better chance of covering a World Series as a writer right now than they do with playing in one, and that's not the knock to kids.
Of course.
I'm just talking about how difficult it is. But even to get to the level that Tom has gotten to, that's a difficult thing also. I mean, to be the sole writer for the Gannett Papers, covering the Yankees, is only, there's not five of them, there's one of them,
Yeah, so, that's incredible. That's an incredible feat.
He basically was a major leaguer just in the journalism.
Right. But look what he's doing now. He's doing something that's really kind of out of the ordinary when you think about it. A horse rider, How many people are involved around horses, So
exactly.
It's pretty cool.
Like I said, to us it is, but to other people, is how many people can't wait to wake up tomorrow morning and go to the track? There's a whole bunch of them.
What do you do for a living? I interview horses. Okay.
Back? Yeah, right. We hope not. But yeah, another fun night. Like I said, we'll see what we get next week. I don't think John's on.
John.
I don't think I don't think Ed's on. But I don't know if I'm allowed to end the call. Am I allowed to end that? How's this
you
work,
Bob? You can do whatever you want, Mr. Daugherty. Whatever you feel free to do, and you can do it. It's been a pleasure talking to you tonight, and Mr. Eddie Bartoli. I wish you a good night. And talk to you soon, John.
I thank you guys for your help as well. And again, I'll hopefully see you guys in the next couple of days somewhere. But otherwise, we'll sign off. And Silverback Nation, like I said, have a great night, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the show. And we'll talk again next Wednesday.
Arrivederci.
Get home safe. All right.